mano, não é só isso. Né?
It's connected and ready to use. So what happened?
That's not it? Oh, yeah, it did.
Does this work?
Does this work? Yeah. Good in the middle. Is that your watch?
No.
We'll need to leave it with security afterwards.
What?
Of course, this clock is not even in sync with the one outside. The one outside actually runs there. Right. Should I just move?
Yeah, well, totally.
I'll introduce you. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to guest. Please stand up for questions.
Shouldn't be raising it today.
Ready? No? Well, I don't care. Petros is lecturing, so.
Yeah, hi guys. So yeah, I'm Petros, and I'm going to be lecturing about the assignment, basically. So I'm a PhD student of Jacques. I'm finishing my you can hear me, right? Cool. So I'm finishing my third year now. It's all pretty good. So I'll be talking to you about your first assignment for this course. And we're basically going to go through what the assignment is about and what you're supposed to be doing for the assignment. And then there's going to be another lecture on Thursday, which is going to be more about Haskell and the technical parts of the assignment. So we're going to be focusing on somewhat of a higher level for this lecture. And then on Thursday, you can actually ask any questions. So I encourage you to read through the assignment sheet if you haven't already. So you can ask any questions you'd like on Thursday. And if we don't manage to finish all of this lecture today, we might have to finish it on Thursday. So yeah, your assignment is about constraint satisfaction problems. And the aim is to familiarize yourselves with what are constraint satisfaction problems and allow you to implement and evaluate some basic algorithms using Haskell. So you're going to be using a CSP, a particular framework that is already implemented in Haskell. And you can go through this particular file that has that's sort of like a reference manual that describes all the functions and all the data types that you can use to make your lives easier. So the framework contains data types and functions for variables, assignments, domains, constraints, and CSPs, basically anything you need to describe the problems that we will be dealing with. And there's also an examples.hs file that has some examples of constraints and CSPs that are already implemented for you. So you can actually go through them and see how they're implemented and get inspired from that. Okay, let's get started. So what is a CSP? Well, if we go through the formal definition of what a CSP is, it's basically, it consists of a set of variables, a set of domains, and a set of constraints. So we basically have a set of variables that can be assigned specific values. And the values that can be assigned for each variable are inside this list of domains. So each variable has a set of domains, a set that is its domain, a list of possible values that we can assign this variable. And we also have a set of constraints that define the relations between the variables and the allowed values that they can have. Okay? So we're going to go through the framework and see how the framework allows you to express all these things and work with them. So we begin with variables. So variables are simple strings. So you can name your variables whatever you want. You just express them as strings. And, well, x and y are two simple examples. And the domain for each variable is actually a list of integers. So the allowed values in this particular framework that we can assign to our variables are integers. So a simple list of 1, 2, 3 is a list of possible values that, like, x or y can have. And of course, each value doesn't necessarily mean that we have to use the integer as the meaning of that value. It can actually correspond to something else, to a color, for example. So instead of red, green, and blue, we can have 1, 2, and 3 that correspond to each color. Or there could be a position. We can have like an ordered position, one next to the other. Or it could be an actual value. So if you can think of the Sudoku as being a CSP, then the values that we assign the variables are the actual numbers or the digits that we put in each box of the Sudoku. So we combine these two to create a domains list, which is basically associating the domain of each variable with the variable itself. So it's just a list of pairs where each variable is connected to a list of possible values. So in this case, x has a domain of 1, 2, 3, and y has a domain of 1, 2. So you just create a list of domains and a list of variables associated with their respective domains. Okay. The next thing we need to represent is the assignment. And this basically corresponds to the state of our search. And what that means is when we're trying to solve the problem, we're trying to find a particular assignment for each variable, a particular value that we will assign to all the variables so that they satisfy our constraints. And the assignment can be actually a partial or a full or a complete assignment. So we can actually assign a few variables as we go through our search until we are able to assign all of them. And this one the assignment is implemented as a custom data type within your framework. And you can think of it just as a list of assigned variables. So basically a list of variables that you have actually assigned a particular value from their domain. And in order to use this custom data type, you can actually use one of these three functions. So you can assign a variable, which means that given an already created assignment, so you already have, for example, it could be the empty assignment, like the empty list, and you give it a variable and a value that you want to assign to it, and it adds it to the list. So like using this function, you can create incrementally your assignments as you go through your search. You can also look up the value that you have already assigned to a variable using this function. And there's also another helpful function that allows you to check if a variable has been assigned a value yet or not. So this one returns true if it's not yet assigned. So the point here is, I'll be talking about this on Thursday as well, but the point here is that you don't need to know the details of this particular data type. All you need to do is use these three functions to work with that. These should be enough. Okay. The next thing we need to express within our frameworks to be able to describe CSPs is constraints. And according to Russell and Norvig, a constraint, of course, consists of a pair, the scope and the relation. And, well, what the scope is basically a list of variables that this constraint enforces its that this constraint is enforced upon. Okay, so for example, if we have x and y as a list of variables, that means we have a constraint that somehow constrains variables x and y. That's the scope. And then we also have the relation. So the relation actually describes what the constraint is about, what it is actually doing. And in Russell and Norvig, you can read through, and it says that the relation actually defines the set of tuples for this list of variables that are allowed by this constraint. But there is also another way of implementing that, more generally, or more simply, rather, as a function. So that's what we are doing here. We're defining relations as functions. And what these functions do, they tell us, well, give me a scope, give me a list of variables that I must impose the constraint upon, and the current state. And I'll tell you if that state is consistent. Okay, that's basically what the function is doing. I'll give you a simple example of the vars diff. The vars diff is a relation, it's a function in Haskell that says, okay, you'll give me a scope of two variables. So I need a scope of only, I assume that the scope you're giving me only has two variables in it. And then I check that these two variables in the assignment that you give me are different, have been assigned different values. So in this particular assignment, the x has been assigned to 1 and y has been assigned to 2. So basically, vars diff for this scope in this assignment returns true. Whereas if they were both the same, it returns false. So we have defined a function that actually describes or gives us the consistent states based on this scope. Okay? And there are more examples. This is one of the examples in examples.hs. You can look up. There are more examples of such relations and constraints in there. Okay, so now we combine, like I said, we combine this scope with this function to create this pair. And that's the way we define our constraints. So this is the constraint itself is also like a custom data type. And there are some available functions that you can use to work with that. So you can check the constraint. So given a state, you go the check constraint function. Given a constraint and a state, it will return if the state is consistent or not with respect to the constraint. You can check a list of constraints. You can retrieve the scope of a constraint. You can think of this as a getter function if this was Java, for example. So the scope of the constraint will return you the list of variables. Is constrained if you provide a constraint and a variable, it will tell you if the variable is within the scope. And the neighbors of basically returns the list of variables. Given a variable, it returns the list of variables that are in the same scope with the given variable. And if the variable is not constrained by this particular constraint, it will return the empty list, obviously. Okay, so there are functions. These functions you can use to manipulate constraints on their own. Now we're putting it all together to see how we describe CSPs altogether. So like we said, CSP is a set of variables, a set of domains, and a set of constraints. And again, we're using a custom data type that you don't need to know much about. All you need to do to know is that it contains this domains list that I showed you in the beginning, where each variable has its associated domain, and also a list of constraints, the way that I showed you that we defined them. And there's also three very simple getter functions, if you like. The vars of that returns the list of variables, so x. The domains that returns the domains list, all the domains of the variables. And the constraints that returns basically c. So this way we have fully defined a CSP using our data type. In addition to that, there are a lot of helpful functions that in the framework already implemented for you that you can use. So there are some domain functions like domain of that returns the domain of a variable, set domain that you can set a new domain for a particular variable. You can add a value to a particular domain and so on. A few more functions. You can look at them up on the reference manual. There's some variable functions, so you can get an unassigned variable from the CSP in a given state. You can get the constraints that constrain in which a particular value. You can get the constraints where if a particular variable is within their scope. So if a variable is constrained by one, that you will get it using this function. And you also have some assignment functions, is complete, is consistent. So you can check if an assignment has all the variables assigned or if an assignment is consistent with all the constraints in the CSP. So a lot of functions, look them up on the reference manual. There's a very detailed, fairly detailed description of what they're doing. And you can also peek at the code and see how they're working. The last thing that is included in the framework is the backtrack algorithm. So this is from Russell and Norvik. This is just a screenshot. Not a very good one, but it's a screenshot. And this is the algorithm that you've learned about, okay? The simple backtrack algorithm. So it has some parameters to do some inference here. But in our implementation, that you're given in the framework, is the very simple form of the backtrack algorithm. So it's very simple. So this is the Haskell code, actually. And I don't want to go through it in detail. We might do so on Thursday if you guys want. But it's pretty much a straightforward translation of the backtrack algorithm without the inference into Haskell. And the only particular point that you would want to pay attention to is that there's a for each loop here that loops through all the values of a particular variable, trying to find a consistent one, right? So instead of a for each loop, because Haskell doesn't support for loops, we actually create a recursive function, and we actually do a recursion over all the possible values of the for each loop. So instead of having a for loop, we have a recursion. That's basically the difference. Other than that, it's pretty much straightforward. You can go through it and see that it corresponds directly to this algorithm. Okay, so now we've described the framework. We've got everything we need to describe variables, to describe assignments, to describe domains, to describe constraints, and entire CSPs. And we also have the backtrack algorithm for us, so everything is good. So now it comes to what you guys need to implement. What are part of your assignments? And we've got a list of things that I'll go through them one by one. So the first one is the implementation of Cluedo as a CSP. So which one of you doesn't know what Cluedo is? You don't know what Cluedo is. You have never played. Anybody else has not played? Okay, cool. Cool. So Cluedo is a very nice board game where you get to investigate a murder. And basically you're trying to gather clues from your from the other players, and you have to reach to the truth as soon as possible. So we have a variation of this game implemented as a CSP, or we're trying to have one implemented as a CSP. So basically here's the story. It's a bit different from the actual game, so bear with me. So we have five houses. So basically there's a murder. So is it Dr. Black or Mr. Black? Dr. Black was murdered in Tudor Mansion, and we are trying to find who murdered him. And we actually have five suspects. So it's Miss Collett, Reverend Green, Colonel Mustard, Miss Peacock, and Professor Plum. And they live in five different houses. We don't know who lives in which house. And these houses are numbered from 1 to 5. And these houses also have colors. But we don't know which house has which color. We've lost track. So we've got one house is green, one is red, one is blue, one is yellow, and one is white. We don't know which house is whose and which color is whose. We also have five possible murder weapons. And we also have five rooms in the Tudor Mansion, and one of these rooms were the rooms that the murder took place. And there's also five possible people. And one is the accomplice, one is innocent, one was sleeping, one was studying, and only one was the murderer. And we have gathered, after careful investigation, we've gathered 14 clues. And we're trying to combine these clues to find who murdered Dr. Black in which room and with which weapon. Okay? And here are the clues. I'm not going to go through them in detail. You can read them in the assignment sheet. They're fairly straightforward. So Miss Collett lives in the greenhouse. Colonel Mustard is innocent. So you have all these kind of clues. And the question is, the question for the assignment is, can you implement this as a CSP? Okay? And to give you some help, basically, what you'll be trying to do is you can use these numbers as the values for your variables. And then the rest could be sort of variables, okay? So everything is a variable, and you try to assign each variable a number. So the variables that have the same number correspond to the same person, okay? That's pretty much what you're supposed to do. So that's the first part. That's the first 10%. So define the Cluedo CSP within the framework. Check the examples from the map of Australia. There are actually four CSPs implemented already for you in the framework. There's a map of Australia from Russell and Norvig. There's a similar problem with the map of Scotland. There's a 3x3 magic square and the Sudoku. So you can read the description in the reference manual as well. They're all implemented for you. You can go through them and look at how the constraints are defined, look at how the CSPs are defined, and try to do the same for your Cluedo CSP. So you have to define the variables and their domains, and define the constraints. And for the constraints, you need to use relation functions, right? And some of them are already implemented for you, but you also need to implement these two. So there is a relation has value that you give it a value, and it constrains one particular variable that it must only have that value. And var same has a scope of two variables and must check that they have the same value. Okay, and once you've implemented the Cluedo CSP, you can test it using the backtrack algorithm and see if you can get who the murderer was. The next step is for 20% in the forward checking algorithm. So it's the first algorithm that provides some forward inference for backtracking to make it a little bit more efficient. So what this does is whenever we assign a variable x, and we give it a particular value, we try to check forward and see if this restricts the other variables in some way. Okay? So we look at each unassigned variable y that is a neighbor of x. A neighbor means two variables are neighbors if they're in the same scope. So if they're constrained by the same constraint, in the same relation, we call them neighbors. Okay? So what this does is it deletes from y's domain, y is an unassigned variable that is a neighbor of x, like we said, any value that is inconsistent with the value that we chose for x. Okay? So we assign x a value, we check all the variables that are connected to x through some constraint, and then we delete the values that are not consistent with the one that we picked for x. So let's see, let's go through, even you've seen this already in your lecture, but I'm going to go through this a bit quickly just to remind you of how this works. So we've got the map of Australia problem from Russell and Norvig. And the first one we assign is West Australia, and we just pick the color red to assign first, just a random pick, just the first pick. Now what this does is that this part is called the Northern Territories, NT. And now this one is adjacent to West Australia, so it can't be red anymore. So this is what forward checking does. So the neighbors of West Australia is Northern Territories and South Australia. So basically, what forward check does is we go to the domain of these two variables that are neighbors of this one, because they are connected through this constraint that they must not have the same color. We say, well, if we put red here, this is not going to be consistent. So there's no way this Northern Territories can be red. So we just delete red from the domain. We also do this for South Australia. And then we go on and we assign this, the next value. And this time we pick, which one is this?
Greensland,
sorry. Queensland. Sorry.
It's fine.
You're Australian?
No.
Okay, but you've been reading in Russian Norvig, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. So we pick Queensland and we assign this to green. Okay. Now Queensland is also connected to a number of territories through constraints, saying that the two territories that are adjacent should not have the same color. So yeah, Northern Territories can no longer be green, so we just delete green from the Northern Territories. And New South Wales, right, this one, and cannot be green anymore. And South Australia also cannot be green anymore. So we delete the green from all the neighbors because they can't be the same. And then we pick the next one, which is, Victoria, sorry. All right, so we assign this to blue. And now what happens is very interesting, because South Australia can no longer be blue either. So suddenly we've detected that this one no longer has any available values. So basically we're stuck, because when we reach the point where backtracking will assign South Australia a value, there will be no values to assign. So forward checking can actually look forward to that and expect that. And actually, as soon as you figure out that one domain became empty, you just fail immediately. You don't have to go down this tree anymore, this search tree anymore, this search branch anymore. You just backtrack immediately, you're done. You know that this is going to fail. So this is how forward check works, and this is how it helps backtracking to avoid certain branches in the search. And now you have to implement this and add it to your backtracking algorithm that you already have. So basically, you'll implement a forward check function that, given an x and the current state, the assignment that we have so far, the partial assignment, we apply forward checking. Okay. So x is obviously already assigned a particular value in the state that we give. And we check its neighbors to see if some of these values now are inconsistent. And we delete this from the domain. Okay? And then we check if one of these domains becomes empty, because then we need to fail and backtrack. So that's what the function does, this function does. And then the second part of this is merely to add forward checking to your original backtracking algorithm. So at the point where you're supposed to be doing inference, you just add this forward check function that you implemented and enhance your backtracking algorithm. So that's it for forward checking. And then we move forward, and now we want to implement some more heuristics to make it a little bit more intelligent, to make it, you know, to help the algorithm a bit more. And the first heuristic is also described in Russell and Norvig. It's the minimum remaining values. And this one is a variable ordering heuristic. So backtracking, the original algorithm just takes the order of the variables that pretty much randomly, just the order that they are defined in the CSP, basically. So what MRV is doing, it's trying to readjust the order of the variables so that it's a more intelligent way of picking them. And what it's actually doing is selecting the variable first that has the least available values. So if we only have two values instead of having 10 values for a particular variable, then we are limiting the branching factor high up in the tree, in the search tree. So this will probably allow us to do less search. And now you need to implement this this heuristic. And basically what you need to implement is MRV compare. So this is a function, you give it two variables, and it returns the ordering of the sizes of the domains. So all it does, it retrieves the domains of these two variables and compare the sizes. And it returns LT if it's less than, if it's less, so you give it X and Y, two parameters. It returns less than if X has a smaller domain than Y. It returns EQ if they're equal, and greater than if the domain of X is bigger than the domain of Y. So in this example, X has a domain of 1, 2, 3. Y has a domain of 1, 2. So MRV compare will return greater than to show that X has a bigger domain than Y. Okay. The next step is to implement the getMRV variable. And this one returns an unassigned variable that has the smallest domain. And the tip here is to try and use the sortBy function that can use this kind of ordering to order the list of variables that you have. So this should be very straightforward if you use this function. And finally, FCMRV recursion is the same as the FC recursion, so it's the backtracking algorithm with forward checking and now with the MRV heuristic. Okay, you combine them all together. Good. There's a second heuristic that you're going to try to implement. And this one, as opposed to the MRV heuristic that was a variable ordering heuristic, this one is a value ordering heuristic. So, okay, MRV told us which one we're supposed to pick, which variable we're supposed to pick. But there's also an ordering in the values that we wish to assign. So is West Australia going to be blue, red, or green? Which one should we pick first? So this heuristic tries to make it better by saying that we'll pick the value that has... select the value that allows the most choices for the neighbors. So we select a value, right? We find out, we go to all the neighbors, and we check how many values for the neighbors this one allows. So if we assign blue to West Australia, how many available values do we have for their neighbors? How many are left? So we count all these for each of the values, and we decide we pick the one that allows the most. So you implement the first function, the num choices. Given a variable x, it returns the total number of values choices allowed for all neighbors of x. Okay, so you give it an assignment, and it assumes X has already been assigned to a value. Okay, so we've already picked the value that we want to check. And based on this value, we go to all the neighbors and find the number of allowed choices for the neighbors. That's all that numChoices does. And the second part is LCV sort, which returns the domains of a variable sorted with this heuristic. So basically, all you have to do is apply this function to all of the values and count the choices, all the number of choices, and then sort the variables given all the number of choices for all their values. Okay, so basically, we want to reorder the list of all unassigned variables using this function. And then you have two more versions of your algorithm. The first one is the forward-checking algorithm, so it's backtracking with forward-checking and only LCV, only the value ordering heuristic, so we're still picking variables in a random order. And we also have FCV, MRV, LCV recursion, so it's forward-checking with MRV, LCV, all put together in one super algorithm. Okay? Good, so that's the most of the implementation part. And now comes the evaluation and discussion part. So that's great. We implemented all the heuristics. We implemented all the algorithms. And we ended up with five of them. So it's the backtracking algorithm, the original one that you have, forward checking with MRV, forward checking with LCV, and all of them in one. And you also have four CSPs. well, you should have four CSPs by the time you reach that point. You've got the map of Australia already defined for you in the framework, the map of Scotland already defined for you, the magic square, again, within the framework, and the Cluedo that you implemented yourselves. So basically, what you have to do is build a 4x5 table, so 4 problems by 5 algorithms, and fill in the values of the number of visited nodes. So the algorithm, the backtracking algorithm, is implemented in a way that not only it returns the solution, but it also tells you how many nodes it visited while it was searching. Okay? And by a visited search node, we mean whenever we assign a value to a particular variable, so we pick a variable and we pick a value and we assign to it, and then we run the recursive call to the algorithm, this is considered a visited node. So how many of these nodes, how many assignments did the algorithm need to do? So you basically run the algorithms, you get all the values, and you fill in the table. And of course, that's not it. You have to explain briefly, the key word here being briefly, the values on the table. And you should focus on these pairs of algorithms that I'm giving you. Don't just compare everything. Compare the values of BT to FC. Compare FC to FC plus MRV. And compare FC to FC plus LCV and MRV plus versus LCV and MRV plus the whole thing. So compare these as pairs, as if you were evaluating individually these pairs, and describe the differences between the values and why are these differences there. Try to explain it very briefly. Don't copy paste the whole book. Just briefly explain to demonstrate that you understand how the heuristics work and why they're helping. And explain if the values were expected or not, and why you think, if something is unexpected, why do you think it wasn't as expected? And there's also a last question as part of your discussion, which is asking if there's a simple but effective optimization for forward checking. And you can suggest anything. I mean, anything that, well, a simple. If it's simple and effective, you can suggest it. That's pretty much it. But you should also consider large-scale CSPs, not just the small ones that you go through in this coursework, but consider very large ones, like thousands of constraints and thousands of variables. And just give some suggestions or your arguments why this is an optimization. Again, keep it short. Don't expand too much. Short, brief, concise, but on the spot. And like I say, it should be no longer than one A4 page of plain text. So you will be including this as comments in your Haskell file that you will be submitting. And if you print it, it should not exceed one A4 page. So that's your evaluation and discussion. And now there's the last part, the last 20%, which is the AC3 algorithm. And the AC3 algorithm is a constraint propagation algorithm, which is better, which is supposed to be stronger than forward checking. And what this does, it tries to maintain consistency between arcs. And what is an arc? An arc is a connection between two variables. So if two variables are connected through a constraint, there is an arc between the variables. So you can think of variables as nodes in a graph, and the arcs are the constraints that connect them. So in order for an arc between two variables to be consistent, then for every value x of the variable x, there should be a possible value of y that is consistent with this x. Okay, so this sounds a bit weird. So let's see when the problematic case occurs. And that is, if there is a value x prime, such that if we assign this value to x, then there is no consistent value for y. What does that mean? So for example, we have a variable x that has domain 1 and 2. So this could be green and blue. And we have y that can only be assigned green. And we also have the constraint between them that they should be different, the vars diff constraint, if you remember. So we've got the arc x to y, and we need to make this consistent. So we go through the values of x, so this is the small x, the values of x, and we say, okay, let's check 1. If we assign 1 to x, does this allow any values, any room for choices for y? No, it doesn't, because if we need them to be different, then this can't be 1. So the domain becomes empty, but we have no choices for y. So what we need to do is remove 1 from x, because this creates a problem for us in this particular arc. So basically, AC3 will revise the domain of x by removing 1, because 1 creates this inconsistency. All right. So this is the algorithm taken directly from Russell and Norvig. And this is the algorithm you will be implementing. Okay? I don't want to go through it. You've already done this in the lecture in detail. But the point is that this is exactly the algorithm that you need to implement. So the first part is the exist consistent value. So basically, it's the function that performs this check over here. And this one says, give me two variables, x and y, and a value that you picked for x. And then I will check if there exists a value in the domain of y such that all constraints between x and y are satisfied. So I'll just check if this particular value that you gave me allows some choices for y, or it just eliminates the whole domain. And it assumes that x and y are connected by some constraint in the CSP, okay? Are in the same scope of one of the constraints in the CSP. Once you have that, which is basically this check, like I said, so if no value y in dj allows xy to satisfy the constraint between xi and xj, so this one is the opposite. Okay, it returns true if there is a value that satisfies the constraints. So using this, you can implement the revise function. And this returns a possibly revised CSP. So the CSP contains the domain, so maybe some of the domains were revised. And it returns true if the domain of xi was revised and false if it wasn't. So xi is one of the parameters of this function. So yeah, revise gets a CSP as a parameter and two variables. Good. Third and main part is the AC3 check. So it's basically this part of the algorithm. And it uses the revise function to complete the AC3 check. So it returns an updated CSP, so some of the domains may be updated. And it returns true if no inconsistencies were found. So similarly to forward checking, if you remember, sometimes would detect that one of the domains becomes empty, so it allows us to backtrack immediately. The same thing happens with AC3. It might detect that no values of x allow us to continue. So it just returns false, and we can break the algorithm and choose another branch. So you have AC3 recursion, which is, again, the backtracking algorithm, the original backtracking algorithm with AC3 in it. You add this in the inference part again. And you also have AC3 plus MRV plus LCV recursion, where you add the MRV and LCV heuristics to AC3. That's about it. And there is some more discussion. So you need to also check the visited nodes that AC3 and the AC3 MRV LCV returns. And you should compare forward checking to AC3 and forward checking plus the two heuristics with AC3 plus the two heuristics. And the same discussion for the previous part applies here, the same kind of questions, the same kind of discussion. And you can add no more than half an A4 page for this discussion of the AC3 part. Don't go beyond that. All right, so that covers what you have to do for the assignment to get 100%. And the question is now, where can you get help? For the theory, you can go through Lecture 6 and Russell and Norvig sections 6.1 to 6.3. That's all the theory is included there. And I would urge you to make sure that you follow the theory of Russell and Norvig. So, you know, there's even to the detail if you want. Just follow whatever Russell and Norvig says when you're implementing your algorithms. For the framework, you can check the reference manual. So there's a PDF explaining all the functions, like I said. And you can also go through the code. You can be inspired of how the constraints are being built, the other CSPs, how they're constructed, and you can use the same techniques. There's a drop-in lab every Wednesday 4 to 6 in the Upland Tower South Lab. Do make sure you make use of that, because I'm going to be there. I'm going to be waiting for any questions you might have about the assignment. So just come and ask and try and find me there. I'll be there. You can also mail me. And make sure you also follow any mails that I will be sending to the InfDD students list. So make sure you check those out, because sometimes I may send the hint if a lot of people have a problem with a particular section, or if there's a problem and a bug or anything like that, I'll just provide a hint through there. And you have to check this out. If you need some refresher with your Haskell, there is going to be the Thursday lecture. Actually, that's the last part. on Thursday. We're going to talk a little bit more about the technical parts of the assignment, the data types in some more detail, and focus on some basic stuff from Haskell, just to refresh your guys from your Haskell from last year. And there's also the website that you can go check out, and there's a wiki and then a helpful files that you can read through and revise stuff. Some helpful hints. So make sure you comment your code. I like comments of your code because it makes much easier to understand what's happening. And there's likely that if something is not working and you don't have any comments for me to understand why it's working the way it's supposed to be, then you're probably going to lose marks just because, you know, I don't know what's going on. And make sure your code, when you submit your code, make sure it loads on GHCI. So it's the Haskell interpreter. It's installed on Dice. You can just load your code there and make sure it runs. Now, many of you may, some of the algorithms, depending on how you implement them, may take too long to finish. You have to make sure that your algorithm finish between, and they're expected to finish at most after 5 minutes. And this excludes the Sudoku problem. So if you noticed, there is a Sudoku from Russell and Norvig implemented in the framework. And you can actually use the framework to create your own Sudoku problems and solve your own Sudoku problems. But these take slightly longer, and this is the reason why they're not included in your evaluation. You shouldn't be running those for evaluation. It's just for your own amusement. And they might take more than 5 minutes. That's all I'm saying. So don't try to do that for the Sudoku problem. You can add any custom functions that you think might be helpful. You know, you don't have to stick to whatever is already available. Try not to re-implement stuff that are already in the framework. Try to, you know, to reuse what is already there. But if you need a function and you think it's going to be helpful for you, feel free to implement it. But do comment it and explain why you implemented it, why you're using it, why. It's very simple. It doesn't have to be 3 pages of comments. Just a single line, I did this function because it helped me with that and this and the other. And do not change the names or the type definitions. Okay, they're already provided for you, the functions and their type definitions. They should be as is. And I will be running some unit tests on those, and if they don't match the type, they won't be executed properly, and you might lose marks. And a helpful tip is to create your own unit tests, like a boss, yeah. So create your own unit tests. Try to test your own functions. Don't just implement them and assume they work or, you know. Try to create small tests, come up with your own very small CSPs and provide variables and constraints to your functions and try to test them if they work as they're supposed to be working. And please do avoid plagiarism. So if you notice, I didn't put the forever alone face there, but I did put the no face there. Because this doesn't mean that you're supposed to be working completely alone and, you know, secluded in a closed room with no ears and no eyes anywhere else. You're encouraged to discuss the assignment with your friends, but you should not be copying each other's code. And if you do it, you most likely will get caught because it's very easy, especially with Haskell code, to even if you start renaming things and all these tricks some people come up with, we're still able to detect the same code. It's very obvious. There's so much variety in the code if you do it on your own that, you know, you should try just not to be doing it. So feel free to discuss the problems, you know, try and come, you know, come up with the solutions, but don't share the code, don't look at each other's screen, don't copy-paste code. That's it. The deadline is the 27th of February, so plenty of time. But is it plenty of time, really? It's a fairly big assignment. It's not that hard, but it's fairly big. So I encourage you strongly to start early. If you haven't anybody has started already? Great. Oh, that's a few of you. That's good. I've already been receiving some emails about it, so it's very good. Start early, try and work on it early, and of course, good luck. And we have some time, like 10 minutes for questions, yeah.
Will labs start tomorrow?
The labs have already started from last week, and I will be there tomorrow as well, yes. Any questions? Anything? Yes.
How do you find the plagiarism?
How I find the plagiarism? I'm that good. I'm that good. No, like I said, I mean, in Haskell, especially in functional programming, there is so many ways to implement the same function. There's so many ways, and it's when you use the same technique, it's so obvious, And you're very likely to do the same mistake sometimes as well. So it's very easy. Trust me. Trust me. I've been marketing Haskell assignments. It's the third year now. And it's always so easy to just, you know, put it down and say, wow, these are the same. Yeah, what's your name? Yes.
In the Pluto example, mm-hmm. are houses numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 also, are 1 and 3 neighbors of 2?
Yes, so.
But not of 4 and 5.
What do you mean by neighbors?
Because in the clues, some of the clues say that something was found in a house next to.
Great, okay, great. So the question is, if you didn't hear it, he's asking that the houses are numbered 1 to 5, does this mean that one is the neighbor of the other, or the one house is next to the other? Well, that's the whole point. You should be exploiting the fact that this is the order of the houses on the street.
Okay.
So, for example, 1 is next to 2, and 3 is next to 2 as well, and so on. But 4 is not next to 1. Okay, so you should be exploiting this order. Yes? Is that might be a typo? Is that in the assignment sheet?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have a look. Is that there? One, two, three, four, five. Is that? Oh, sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, the width. Yeah, that's the accomplice problem. I'll update the assignment sheet to make sure this is corrected. Thanks for the catch. Any more questions? So one last thing, there's going to be the other lecture on Thursday. I really encourage you to go through the assignment sheet if you haven't already, and make sure you ask any questions there as well. It's a good opportunity for you to do that. And see you on Thursday, and good luck.
One last thing. Please note that the assignment is due at 2 p.m., right? That's before
the
lecture.
2 p.m., yeah.
Expected time we have to spend on. Like approximately how much time we spend?
Actually, it's on the
descriptor.
It's in the descriptor, so we actually do make sure of that. So it's I've forgotten actually. Where do you have? Oh, we can't go online. So if you go to the course descriptor, you'll see the expected amount of time. It's actually more than enough. Don't go over this. Oh, just leave it. Because maybe somebody else will use it after that, right? Just log out. You log out. Right?
Let's guess something. I didn't
that's easy then.
Me too.
Plenty of stuff.
It was a bit intense, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you have a bit of time. A few questions.
If your Haskell is up to scratch, it should be good enough, and you understand the problem, it doesn't take that long. because it is broken down into small parts. They're not asking the reading of the algorithm in one group. It's not just asking to implement ease and frequency.
It might look like a lot, but how is a small function or one liner very simple? So if you understand the problem, you really
don't have to do this. It's just in order.
Like, so you're just expecting it.
You remember this, and you still have to do it.